And welcome to the Ted and Austin Brewer Show. This is Ted Brewer, your host today. Austin is going to join us. I asked him to come on today if he could. He wanted to, and so don't think I'm trying to push him too hard, but I've also told him that if he starts getting too fatigued, he needs to go ahead and back out a little bit and not push himself. So we're going to be doing the best we can on the show today, so you guys just stay with us and see what we're going to do, I guess. Austin, good to have you back, buddy. I'm glad you're alive.
Thanks, bud. Me too. I'm glad to be back on the show today.
Okay, good, good, good. I want to go ahead and read you a few things real quick about the fatherless epidemic in the United States. It's really, really hit the minorities, primarily the African community, African American. What I've done is I've done some research on this as far as these kids who don't have dads, and here's some of the statistics that we found. And we're going to cover a whole bunch of news here in a few minutes, guys, but let me get this one out first because I've been trying to get this one out for a couple of days. 85% of all youths in prison come from fatherless homes. 20 times the national average. This is funny because a lot of the kids, Dr. Dobson did a show on this a few years ago, and he said that during Mother's Day, the prisons, everybody's on the phones, they're all fighting to get on the telephones, they're sending cards to their mothers and everything else. He goes, during Father's Day, nobody wants to talk to their dads because a lot of these guys simply don't know who their fathers are. 85% of children with behavioral problems come from a fatherless home, 20 times the national average. 75% of all adolescents in chemical abuse centers come from a fatherless home. 71% of all high school dropouts, you got it, fatherless home. 71% of teenage pregnancies, daughters without fathers are 711% more likely to have children as teenagers. 90% of all homeless and runaway children are fatherless homes. 90%. 63% of youth suicides are from fatherless homes. And 80% of rapists with anger problems come from fatherless homes. You know, guys, here's the thing. This entire culture that the bankers have brought us is a culture of turning everything upside down that God has made for us. It's the Sabbatean way. It's the way of turning everything upside down and do what feels good, do what thou wilt, according to Aleister Crowley. And we have to understand something, that God set certain parameters up in the Bible as far as what we should do and shouldn't do. And we really need to maintain the nuclear family in the United States. I've really never talked about this very much because it's so obvious to you guys that we're married and we've got a bunch of kids. But let me share with a few things about this and how this works. People don't understand that when kids are raised without a mother and father, it causes a huge gap in their development because they don't have a person to look forward to being with every single day from the opposite sex or from the same sex. Let me give you an example. Studies have shown statistically that women who are dominant, who raise young boys, in many cases, these women raise boys that are extremely feminine, in many cases become homosexual. That's just a study. Don't fuss at me for the statistics. Also, with men, if the daughters aren't home, there's all kinds of problems with the girls getting pregnant, as we just talked about. So it needs to be a balance in the family, both husband and wife. A young boy craves male attention. If a young boy doesn't have a father as a role model, as a mentor at home, the only person he can have as a mentor is his mother. And in many cases, he picks up the feminine characteristics. Austin and I have seen many, many people like this, and so that's why it's so important that we balance everything with the Word of God. And dads, listen to me for a second. It's really important you go to church. Find yourself a good church and make sure the kids see you in church, because when you do that, the kids learn from you that church is important. If the parents don't go to church and their kids just get dropped off at church or whatever, I mean, it's better than not taking the kids to church, but they really need to see the leadership example from the father and the mother. And this is what the globalists are so fighting so much against. In Europe, if you belong to a church, they automatically take 10% of your income, your tithe, away from you, from your check, from your employer. And they distribute that among all of the churches, not to your church, but to all of the churches. And so what happened is when they started doing that, there was a massive, massive reduction in churches in Europe. I remember I was watching a videotape last month when I was over in Germany, and it was kind of interesting because it was actually a synopsis of what had happened to the church in Europe in the past 50, 60 years. And there was an old priest there, and he was showing, I don't know if he was Lutheran or Catholic, and he was showing his church back in the 50s, and it was completely packed out. I mean, every row packed out, all the kids in church, choir singing, packed out, one of these big cathedrals. Now they show it today, completely empty. This was done on purpose. They wanted to take God out of the family, the church out of the family, Christianity out of the society, and they've become a secularized society now in Europe, in Germany, everywhere. I mean, everything to them is just politically correct over there now because they've been brainwashed by the mainstream idiot media for so many years, and they don't have a real strong alternative news media outlet in those areas and have to get a lot of their news off the internet, either with Alex Jones or with me or Joyce Riley, and that's or with Hagmans or Dave Hodges, because they want to hear the truth. But the listenership in Europe is very, very small because they don't want to get in trouble with the government. See, Germany doesn't have the kind of constitution that we have where they just go around and say whatever they want to say and have freedom of speech. It's a lot more restricted there. And many of the countries in Europe are the same way. So guys, listen to me. Take your kids to church. Pray with your kids every day. Be an alpha male and be an alpha male spiritually also. Show them the way they should go, and when they're old, they'll not depart from it, is what the word says. Teach a child in the way they should go, and when they're old, they'll not depart from it. Years ago, my wife wrote a cookbook, which is still in print. We have a few left at the office. It's called Train Up a Child in the Way They Should Eat. That's the name of the book. Because what it does, it teaches the children how to eat correctly for all of their life. And it makes it a lot simpler to raise a healthy child if that child's being fed the right kind of foods. What do you think about all this, Oz?
No, you're absolutely right, man. You have to start at the beginning. And that's the biggest factor that people don't realize, is a lot of issues that we've seen in, you know, this generation as they get older, is that the children's upbringing was very poor in the sense of morals, ethics, health, diet. Everything was just very, very poor. And so that's what we see now in this generation of this me generation, this they don't want to wait for anything, entitlement generation. And it's systematic and it's getting worse. So you're absolutely right. We have to start from the basis and start from the beginning. And parents have to start becoming parents again. They can't rely on their iPads and their kindergarten teachers and everybody else to raise their kids for them. They actually have to put in some work and teach their kids the right thing and how to act and how to live and how to be, you know, Christians and what they're supposed to do. And once they start doing that, again, we would see a massive change in the up-and-coming generation. But until we do that, we're not going to get anything of the same.
That you're absolutely right. I want to jump to the health news real quick. They've found some new research now reducing the amount of folks that have pancreatic cancer. Apparently, about 53,000 people of these, they're diagnosed with pancreatic cancer every single year, and about 42,000 die from it. There's a very, very high disease rate, and a very high death rate. Pancreatic cancer is very difficult to detect until it gets way too far. But now they're showing that vitamins B6 and choline are being linked, by deficiencies of these, are being linked to pancreatic cancer, and they're saying that we need to be supplementing our diet with B vitamins and choline every single day, which are the B vitamins. And what happens is the B vitamins support optimal cellular metabolism. Now, what's interesting about this is these vitamins have to be methylated. There's about 40% of the population, they cannot absorb vitamin B complex very well, which means their mitochondria aren't working, which could be the reason that we have such a high incidence of pancreatic cancer. Now, there's one more thing that you can do to massively slash your risk of pancreatic cancer, which is super important, and it's probably as important, if not more important, than the B6 of the choline. Number one thing you have to do is you need to get rid of sodium nitrite in your diets. You can't have any luncheon meat that contains sodium nitrite. That's super, super important. That's one of those acid tests that you do with your diet when you look at a label. If it says anything about sodium nitrite, it has to be completely and totally stopped. Plus, if you've got a problem with pancreatic cancer in your family, it's really important that you cut back and completely eliminate alcohol. One of the primary reasons, again, of pancreatic cancer is the overconsumption of alcohol. Sharon had an uncle who was basically an alcoholic. And he lived over in Vero Beach and just drank all the time, every single night, drinking whiskey. And, you know, and all of a sudden in his 60s, you know, early 70s, he comes diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, and he was dead a few years later. In fact, I think he lived about a year, and he went through some horrible, horrible treatment. And, I mean, just, oh, God, it was awful what happened to him. And, Austin, you had a friend of yours who was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer up in Amelia Island here a while back. Tell everybody how quickly that happened and how quickly he was gone.
It was crazy. That was over there, and he actually lived out of Ocala, and he was great. You know, we worked with him for a while up there when I was working with the builders up there in Amelia Island, And but he had a still. He was real big on grilling stuff and smoking food. He had a real big smoker, and they also had a still out there in Ocala. So they made all kinds of different liquors from the still. You know, make corn alcohol, all kinds of different, you know, whiskeys. And he ended up getting diagnosed. He had some pain. Went in, and they did some tests on him and realized he had full blown pancreatic cancer. Basically told him he had, you know, about a couple weeks to live at best, and gave him, you know, home hospice, got a DNR, and so he went into the hospital, got diagnosed with that on like a Thursday, got home on a Saturday, and checked out that next Wednesday. I mean, that fast. I mean, less than a week, and we went to his funeral, and, you know, it was interesting to see, you know, somebody, and he was very, very healthy as far as your perception of him. He's real big into shoe fighting, you know, jiu-jitsu, martial arts, real good. You know, rode street bikes, race bikes. Me and him had ridden before, too, when I used to have mine. So, you know, he's real lean. You know, he's about 6 foot, about 175, trained all the time. And, yeah, it was an eye-opening experience to see somebody. He was only, I think, early 40s. He was like 42, 43. To see somebody like that that was in really good health, so to speak, from what we saw. And then to get hit with pancreatic cancer like that and check out in less than a week, that was rough. But I have a feeling a lot of it was contributed from the very, very, very hard alcohol they made out there, and also, too, from the smoked meats all the time.
Oh, yeah, he always had a lot of smoked meats. Remember, you told me that. Oh, by the way, choline is vitamin B as in boy, 4. And that's referred to many times as vitamin B4. It's a member of the B complex family. And so that's why I said you need to be on the B complex supplement that we have. It's so, so very important to be on that on a regular basis. Because remember, these are water soluble supplements, and they have to be replaced in the body every single day because our body uses them and urinates them out. The B vitamins are the reason your urine turns yellow. So if you don't have any color in your urine at all, there's a high probability you're simply not getting enough B vitamins in your diet. What's your first story you want to talk about, Oz?
Well, this one's kind of interesting. The FDA now has approved the first stomach pump device for weight loss. And essentially what this is, guys, this is a equivalent of a assisted bulimia device. It's pretty weird. The FDA approved what's described as a reverse feeding tube to help people lose weight. This strange weight loss device is basically an external pump that dumps part of the stomach content into the toilet. The name of the product is Aspire Assist, and is considered minimally invasive and includes a tube that goes from the inside of the stomach to a port on the outside of the abdomen. The patient then attaches the pump on the outside port as needed to remove about a third of the stomach content at a time. What's really odd about this is, you know, this really is essentially assisted, healthier bulimia is all it really is. And what the sad part about this is not a helping device. This really isn't even a beneficial weight device. This is an enabling device. It essentially allows people that are already morbidly obese to sit there and gorge out on massive amounts of food that they already don't need to be eating, and then turn around and pump their stomach a large percentage to the point where they dump most of the calories into the toilet, basically, safely, as far as better than bulimia, because you don't get the esophageal erosion. But to me, it's kind of like, why don't you just not eat the food in the first place? If you're that bad of shape that you need to pump your stomach from all the food you're eating because that high a calorie content, do you really need to get a pump device to pump the food out of your stomach? So that's something I wanted to kind of address today, of how sad of an obese, you know, country we've become now, that this is what we're resorting to, are basically stomach pump devices that are literally considered healthy bulimia, so people can lose weight while still gorging on massive amounts of food. Kind of pathetic, to be honest with you.
Well, you know, it's interesting to me, and I'm just going to talk for just a second. I remember when I took human physiology at Florida State, oh, God, so many years ago now, 40 years ago. I forgot the guy's name. I think it was Loeffler. And he did a seminar one time with us, and he said very clearly, he said, there's no such thing as glandular obesity. He said the reason that people get overweight is because they either have a slower metabolism than other people do, but it's not really caused by glandular problems. It's basically caused because it's genetic or hereditary. And he also said that there's, you know, really no truth to any of that, and that people just are eating too many calories. Now, in the meantime, 40 years later, I found out that the thyroid gland is absolutely critical to have iodine. And if you give it a lot of bromine from food, which is also put into water, or you have fluorine and chlorine put into water or into toothpaste or into mouthwashes, it really, really affects the thyroid gland, and it thinks that these different halogens are fluoride, and it absorbs them, and it causes it to massively decrease its function, including production of thyroxin, which helps to burn body fat. And so it messes up the basal metabolic rate. Now, though he may have been correct in his assumption many, many, many years ago, nowadays, we know there are a lot of things in the food, including high fructose corn syrup, which can massively, massively affect metabolism. So here's what I've seen. I know multiple people who've had bypass surgery. I mean, gastric bypass surgery. Not one of those people is healthy. They all have health problems. Every single one of them. Now, a lot of them have had their stomach stapled. A lot of them have had parts of their intestines removed, and just, it just goes on to all different types of surgery like that. In fact, it's so interesting to me because then they immediately start losing weight when they can only eat a small amount of food in their stomach or they throw back up. And the thing about it is this, they're literally being forced to cut back on their calories because they're going to become nauseous if they don't. And then they start losing a lot of weight, or they have diarrhea constantly because they can't process the food properly because it goes right through their system. All of these different things they're doing to try to just simply do pushaways. Just push away from the table. You know, here's what I've done, and this is over the years. Every single day, 6 days a week, I train in the gym for about 20 to 30 minutes. Anything more than 40 minutes, your body really starts to put out too much cortisol, and it's not really an effective workout, and you get up with a little bit of muscle wasting. You don't want to be in the gym like we were when we were kids, you know, for 4 and 5 hours working out. I mean, you know, when you're 15, 16 years old, and you're trying to become a young alpha male, and you're training all of the time, you got a lot of human growth hormone pumping through your system, and you also got a lot of testosterone. You're kind of like on a natural steroid cycle when you're 15, 16, 17, 18, 19 years old, and your body can handle a lot of that overtraining, which is what that is. And you can get big. I got really big and strong in high school because I was doing all of that, but it really isn't necessary. Later, about 3 years after I got out of high school, I remember I was at Florida State and I met a bodybuilder. His name was Boyer Coe. Now, I never took any steroids or anything like that, but I was always really hard working out really, really hard. And Boyer had won Mr. Universe a couple of times and was a huge bodybuilder guy. He was massive. And we ended up going to dinner with him in Tampa after the Mr. Florida contest. This is in the spring of 76. And I sat and talked to him for about 30 minutes during dinner. And I said, "Can I ask you a few questions?" And he said, "Sure." And so I started asking him the different questions. And he said the whole workout should be like 12 to 15 minutes per body part maximum. This is what he told me. Plus, he said you should only work each body part twice a week. Any more than that, you're overtraining. And I thought, wow, that's really interesting. I've never heard that before. But this guy's like one of the top in the world. So I thought, okay, I can try to do that. And I remember my chest also went from like 45 to like 49. And this is all natural. In about 6 months, my chest and my back stayed incredibly sore. My chest workout ended up taking 12 minutes. It was a 12-minute workout. Before it'd be like an hour workout. Now it's 12 minutes. My back workout was like 15 minutes instead of being an hour. My leg workout was like 15 minutes. So I'm in and out of the gym 4 days a week, and I get bigger and stronger incredibly fast because I wasn't overloading my body, elevating cortisol, causing muscle wasting, and I got huge. And it was kind of interesting to me that I actually trained less and got bigger. And he also talked to me about diet and how important it was to eat a really clean diet all the time, and I'd learned how to do that. So all of these years later, I still work out in the gym 6 days a week. Now I'm 60 years old, and I still train okay. I mean, I have more of a conditioning exercise now because of the joints and everything else. But I've learned something. Every single day when I get out of bed, and some people say, "Well, I don't want to do this." Well, you don't have to. It's okay. It's what I do. Every day when I get out of bed, I get on the scales first thing in the morning after I use the bathroom. I get on the scales, and I weigh myself. And I try to keep between 189 and 199, somewhere in that range. And if any time I'm over 200, I immediately go, absolutely not going to happen. And in the gym, I write my weight down every single day. When I go in, I actually have a chart of what I do every single day, what body parts I work every single day, and, you know, how much I weigh. It's, and now you can look back on it, it's like for years I've had this thing. I've got hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of entries on this. And every single day I write my weight down. And if my weight goes at all over 200 pounds, you'll see in my book, you'll laugh if you saw it, I put a big N-O with an exclamation point, like, no, this is not going to happen. I'm not doing this. I'm not going to allow this to happen. And it keeps me from just allowing my diet, which is super clean, I eat super healthy, from just getting too many calories at my age. That's how I do it, and that's how I'm able to regulate my body weight so easily, because I monitor it every single day. You say, well, I don't want to do that. Well, you don't have to. I mean, if what you're doing is working great for you, don't do what I do, because it doesn't matter. I even have exercise DVDs that we did, oh gosh, back in the 90s when I was still in really, really good shape. And we have a beginning, intermediate, and advanced exercise programs for men and for women that you can do in the privacy of your own home, except for the advanced men's fitness protocol. In that protocol, I give you the exact workout that Boyer Coe gave me back in the 70s. And I've had fitness trainers tell me that thing will kick your butt if you do it. I mean, guys who work out with all day long and help people, they say this is an incredible program. And I tell you what, guys, it's not about spending hours and hours in the gym. What it's about is being very efficient, training hard, and getting out. And when you work out like that, you elevate your testosterone. Even at my age, my testosterone is pretty high. You elevate your testosterone naturally, and you don't have to start taking testosterone-producing or drugs. Like, if you want natural testosterone, either injections or sublinguals. You don't have to do all of that. You can do it all naturally. And when you combine that with the HGH stimulate that we have, as far as training hard with the HGH stimulate, oh, my goodness, you increase lean muscle mass so much, and you have so much energy, and you burn so much fat. It's absolutely wonderful. So those are two little secrets that I do that really, really helped me to stay in shape. If you look at my pictures, you say, does he really look like that? Well, yeah, I really do look like that, and I train hard. Now, I'm probably about 5 pounds up where I need to be to take any more pictures right now, but if I took a photo right now, you couldn't tell the difference anyhow, because I still look really in good shape for a 60-year-old man. So I told my wife the other day, I said, you know, when I turn 61 next year and you turn 60, I said, we're going to take these photographs and we're going to redo them on a bottle, on our vitamins. You know, it has a picture of me at 55 and Sharon at 54, and I said, we need to upgrade this. She goes, well, I don't want to do it when I'm 60. I want to stay 59 on the pictures for another 5 years. And I said, well, we may be able to do that too, Sharon. Whatever you want to do is fine with me. That's one of the things we talked about yesterday. I don't need to burn a whole bunch of chips on that one, Austin. So what's your next story, my friend?
Well, this is interesting. Again, another now more truth comes out about these vaccines, and more and more people are realizing that this is not not just a single vaccine. You know, we talk about a lot of the crap that they put in these vaccines is already horrific, but then the actual CDC recommendations now of what they're supposed to be getting at, you know, 2, 4, and 6 months with these consecutive shots back to back to back. Medical research journalist Neil C. Miller is warning parents that the practice of administering multiple vaccines in one visit is extremely unsafe and even deadly. He states that the CDC recommends that infants receive the polio, diphtheria, hep B, rotavirus, pneumonia, tetanus, influenza type B, and pertussis vaccine at 2, 4, and 6 months of age, despite the fact that such combination has never been tested for any type of safety in clinical trials. He states, our study showed that infants who receive several vaccines concurrently are significantly more likely to be hospitalized or die when compared with infants who receive one vaccine. It also showed that reported adverse effects were more likely to lead to hospitalization or death in younger infants. And what's crazy here is one of the statistics was the fact that 5.4% of these reactions in children getting five or more vaccines concurrently were fatal. It said on here 5.4% of reactions were fatal in those infants who received five or more vaccines at once. 5.4%, Dad. Now, a lot of people may say, well, that's not a high percentage for something. You're absolutely not. If that's your accuracy in a handgun match, that's pretty bad, 5% accuracy. You're talking about the life or death of your child. 5.4% is huge, and that's the percentage when they're receiving five or more vaccines. And what's crazy is the figure fell all the way down 2 points to 3.6% of those receiving four. So what this is going to show you is there's a compounding effect when you start adding in multiple vaccines on top of each other at the same time, yet the CDC refuses to admit it. They refuse to show this type of research, and they don't even give people the option now. Most of these pediatricians are so hung up on the mandatory guidelines of the CDC that they don't even use their brain that God gave them to say, hey, maybe we should try one single vaccine if that's the parent's preference and see what happens in the reaction. You don't even know how your child's going to respond at 2, 4, and 6 months of age, regardless of any vaccine, much less pumping 7 and 8 vaccines at one time. It's the same thing Dad and I have talked about before. When people are sick and they start putting them on 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 plus medications at one time, there's no studies that are ever done to test the safety of that many medications given to a person consecutively all at one time. And this is what they're saying here now, is that, you know, one vaccine a lot of times can be given and the body can't handle it. I'm not saying that's something I recommend, but I'm saying if you go that route, you got to make your own decision. But the 7 and 8 vaccines given at 2 months of age and then 4 months of age and then 6 months of age, that's why we see such a massive side effect at the 6 month mark, because these vaccines are building up and they're causing more and more and more inflammation, and these children's inflammatory response is getting so high. And like Dad talks about before, it starts this cytokine storm where the body cannot handle it. So really, really, really evaluate, guys, if you are considering vaccines, you know, do the research that you need to do and realize that if you are going to go that route, please at least go on the very, very, very slow extended plan, because these kids are so small, they're so young, it's going to be a long time before they're ever in school and actually required to get this stuff. There's no reason to be pumping them full of this many vaccines at a time. 5.4% of the children that got 5 or more vaccines ended in death. That's bad, man. That's really, really significant statistics that I would not be willing to risk my child on.
Well, let me ask you a question about that, because I don't have that article in front of me. Is it talking about if you have 100 kids and 15 of them have a reaction, 5% of that 15 die? Or is it talking about 5% of the aggregate? Or did you read that close to
No, it's talking about the reaction. So okay. If there's 100 kids that had a reaction from that many vaccines,
okay,
5.4% of all the kids that had a reaction, it okay, ended up in death.
Okay, now let me share a few things here real quick. I had a good friend of mine, lives in Celebration, and his wife's name is Laura. And I remember years ago she got pregnant, and they were all about doing vaccines. And when you have somebody who's all about doing vaccines, the only thing I can use as an example is, well, we haven't vaccinated our kids. And the response is, well, we're going to vaccinate all of ours. And I'm like, okay. And so they said, what do you mean, okay? I said, this is your choice. And they said, I said, but what I'd like to do is send you some literature on vaccines. Because if you look at the literature, you can make an informed decision on whether or not you want to do this or not do this, but you're going to do whatever you want to do because it's your kid. So I'm not in this fight. I don't have a dog in this battle. And she goes, well, I'll look at them, but I'm going to vaccinate. I said, okay. So I dumped a plethora of stuff on her. I sent about 40 articles, just one after another, after another, after another, you know, with horror stories. And finally she emailed me back. She goes, man, is this stuff real? And I said, yeah, it's all real. I said, you look it up yourself. I said, I'm not making any of it up. And she goes, well, I have to reevaluate my opinion. And I said, well, you probably need to. I said, but you can do what you want to do. She goes, let me read some more. Calls me back about 2 weeks later. She goes, man, you forget the vaccines. I'm not doing any of this crap. This is stupid. And I'm like, well, yeah, I know. I said, but I didn't argue with you about it. I said, do what you want to do and just read. I have another woman, friend of mine. Her name is Julie. She's my niece, actually, my sister's daughter. And she ended up getting pregnant. She's like 38 years old, first pregnancy. And she called me up. She's all excited because she's pregnant. Got married late in life. And I said, well, that's wonderful, Julie. And she, and I said, what are you doing about vaccinations? She goes, well, I haven't thought about vaccinations. She goes, but we're going to vaccinate. I said, okay, you can vaccinate. I said, but can I send you some information first? She goes, well, yeah, you can send me information, but I'm not interested in reading it. I'm going to vaccinate the kids. You know, it's a safe thing to do. I've been told that my whole life. You have to have vaccines. I said, okay, you can go ahead and vaccinate. I went through the whole same scenario. I did it with Laura. Finally, she calls me back about 2, 3 weeks later. She goes, is this stuff real? It's like the same story. And I said, yeah. And she goes, well, you'd have to be stupid to vaccinate. I'm like, if you're informed and you know what's wrong and you know what's going on, yeah, you'd have to be stupid to vaccinate. Now, if you don't know because you haven't read and you, all you've done is believe this mainstream lie, well, then you're just making an uninformed decision based upon lies. And I said, that's what you need to do. So Julie ended up saying, well, I'm not going to vaccinate. So the kid's born super healthy, smartest kid in the class. Finally, a good friend of her who was also older got pregnant at the same time Julie was pregnant. And Julie had already decided not to vaccinate. And this girl said she's going to vaccinate. And Julie sent her all the articles that I sent. Didn't make any difference. She vaccinated the baby, got like 7 shots at once. Baby died. One of those 5%. Just died. Sudden infant death from the vaccines. Now, guys, listen to me. And here's what I told Austin years ago when he was going into the military, when he was going to the Marine Corps as an officer at the age of 19 when he already finished his bachelor's degree. And I said, you know, if you're going to go in, you've got to understand something. You've never been immunized. I said, they're going to want to shoot you up with a whole bunch of drugs, a bunch of vaccines. And I said, if you go in, you're 19 years old. I'm not responsible for you anymore. I've kept your body from this stuff all of these years. If you want to do it, go in with an informed consent. And he said, well, they're going to give me a waiver so I don't have to do any vaccines, which meant that they would not ever send him to an active field of combat. And I said, that's entirely up to you if you trust me, if you believe these guys. I said, it's up to you. But that was what happened just with a couple of friends. And I could tell you more stories of people who didn't listen to me and their children have autism. Now, what I can say this, all the folks who did listen to me and they did not vaccinate their children by their own choice, not one of them has learning disabilities, not one of them has ADD or ADHD, and not one of them has autism. None of them. None of them. So in the Amish community where they don't vaccinate, there is a 0% chance of autism. They have no autism. None. So the problem is, guys, we've been fed this giant pack of lies. And not only have we been fed it, somebody strapped us down on a stinking gurney and they forced our mouth open and they crammed it down our throat and they said, you're going to believe this and it doesn't matter. It's a lie. You're going to swallow this. And this is what they've done. They've done it to the whole country now until we've got a whole pack of liberals now who run around following Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, who couldn't differentiate the truth from a lie if their life depended on it, and they want to believe the lie. Jesus said, light is to come into the world, but the world has preferred the darkness. Nobody really wants to know the truth unless their heart and their mind has been set free. And when you become a Christian, you start asking questions, and you start seeing things differently. See, this is what's going on in the world right now. We have a battle between light and darkness. Now, I'm not saying that you have to be a Christian in order not to vaccinate. California was the big state in the United States that started not vaccinating children. They're the ones who started doing the homeschool. California. Now, they are mandatorily forced to vaccinate their children by government edict in California if they're in the school system. They have to vaccinate them. So California, as far as being the forerunner of all of these different types of healthy protocols to follow, has now become one of the worst places in the country to raise a child. It's because the liberal media has gotten out there and gotten control of everything, and they want to destroy everything God created to be good. They want to dumb down the population. Now what we have is we got a whole group of population that's been vaccinated with 72 shots that are walking, talking zombies. Their brain are shot. They believe everything the mainstream media tell them. They believe that, you know, that the socialism and, you know, democratic socialist like Bernie Sanders, instead of calling him a communist what he is the way it needs to be done as far as the United States. That Trump is bad because he thinks that people need to be vetted before they come into the country to see if they're a terrorist. They think he's a racist because of that. He's not a racist. He's a realist. Even Rudy Giuliani said they have to profile all of the time. I get so aggravated when I go to the airport and I get profiled. Here I am, about as pale as a German can get. You know, I don't like getting in the sun anymore because it gives me sunspots because I've got so much when I was younger. But I take vitamin D, so I don't have to worry about that. But anyhow, I do get a lot of sun, but not slaying in the sun like I used to. And here I am walking up, and they say, "All right, over here." I'm like, "Well, I'm not going through the X-ray machine." "All right, we're going to pat you down." "Okay, all right, pat me down. Have fun with all that. You know, grope away. Have fun groping me again." And I'm like, whatever. And so then all of a sudden, I see a clear Muslim walk up. You know, he's young. He's all sketchy looking. His eyes are all over the place, like he's doing something wrong. And he probably isn't doing anything wrong. He's probably scared. He's having to go through TSA. Okay? They don't even touch him. "Oh, you have to go through that. Blah, 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 blah. Walk through. Blah, blah, blah." And I'm like, what the heck is this all about? We've got to look at what's going on. All of these attacks are being perpetrated by Muslims. Well, there's a high probability that there's a lot higher percentage chance, instead of me being a white male doing a Muslim, being a Muslim, that I'm not going to do anything. The other day, I was listening to this guy Ritchie out of I think he's out of Scotland or Ireland or England or something. Pretty good talk shows. He has some really good guests on. He's a little bit on the liberal side, a little bit clueless as far as Christianity. And he had this radical woman on. Oh my God, was she radical, Austin? It was unbelievable. I had to turn it off. She started like foaming at the mouth when she was talking about white Christian men, how much she hated them. I kid you not. She got so angry. She's yelling about how horrible white Christian men are and how they're so dangerous. And I'm like, I think to myself, I mean, I thought it was the white Christian guys who started the United States that you live in. I mean, I thought that's who those guys were. I mean, what's up with that? But see, again, she's another liberal mouthpiece that likes to go out, do what she's going to do, say what she's going to say, and act how she wants to act, and everybody thinks she's cool because she's a BMW. Now, I shouldn't have said that, but I'll explain it to you what I mean by that now. God, I shouldn't do it. Should I say that, Austin? Should I tell them what that acronym means? Probably don't need to, do I? I'm going to pass. You guys, if you want to know, I'll send you an email what a BMW is. But Dom, I'm not going to tell you what it is. But the point is,
last time I checked, there was a German sports car. Usually,
that me too. That's me too. It's a really nice German sports car that you know that's really nice if you ever rent one. So anyhow, let's go to the next story. Senate fails to pass new gun control restrictions in wake of Orlando shooting. Praise God! Praise God! Praise God! The Guardian: Democrats and Republicans had to put forth competing amendments to both strengthen background checks and prevent suspected terrorists from purchasing firearms. But all four bills fell short of the 60 votes needed to clear a procedural hurdle in the Senate. Thank you, Jesus. In a near replica of the vote held in December, when a pair of shooters killed 14 people and wounded 22 more in San Bernardino. If you believe that story, I'm not saying that story was real, the chamber first voted on dueling proposals related to the federal background systems. The Republican amendment, which aimed to pour more resources into prosecuting violations of the current background check system, fell short 53-47. The Democratic alternative, which had required background checks for all gun sales, except for gifts and loans between immediate family members, fell by a vote of 44-56. A proposal by Democrats that would have barred the sale of firearms to all individuals on the terror watch list failed in advance of the 50-70. They failed them. The Republican amendment, which would have enabled the Justice Department to delay an individual on FBI terror watch list from completing a gun purchase for a period of 72 hours, was voted down. The Republican plan backed by the NRA would have required the Attorney General to prove to a judge that there was a probable cause for the firearm sale to be denied. So, guys, the reason I read this in such detail, guys, it just takes 60 to get this thing done, to go over the procedural hurdle. These are like 56 to 56. I mean, this is how close we are to tyranny and losing our Second Amendment rights. Please listen to me. This election is not just about Donald Trump. It's about the Republicans in the Senate and the Democrats and the Republicans in the Congress. I mean, we've got to keep these majorities and not let Hillary Clinton have a majority of people who are going to vote for gun control. Because if she gets her wicked witch Washington fingers on any of this, she's going to do everything she possibly can to take away the Second Amendment in its entirety. I mean, she's that messed up. The globalists are that much of a control of her. What do you think, Oz?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's and the thing about it is what nobody realizes is they're doing this, and they have been doing this for the last 30 years very, very slowly and incrementally. They always use these words, these keywords, like, I mean, we need to have common sense gun laws. You know, we need to make sure bad people can't get a hold of these weapons. Well, first off, there's only so many restrictions you can apply on weapons to make them completely unattainable from bad people. Secondly, when you start making these generalized laws that if somebody's on the FBI terror watch list, they can't buy a firearm or they can be blocked from buying a firearm, the same thing that got brought up before where somebody's on the no-fly list, they lose their rights to own a firearm. The issue with this is that the government has such blurred lines now between what actually they can do and what actually constitutes, you know, unlawful action. And what I mean by that is they don't have any type of restrictions on what it is they put you on the watch list for, or the no-fly list. That was the biggest thing we talked about before, the no-fly list one that they were trying to do. There's no guidelines. There's no restriction. It's blanket carte blanche, open interpretation. They can say, well, this guy bought ammo this place at this time too many times, and so we think he may be involved in something, so we're going to put him on the FBI watch list and preventing him from buying a firearm when he goes to the store. That's what all this stuff comes down to. That's why I said before last week that
shooting in Orlando. Did this guy work for G4 Security since 2007? He decided for the first time in his life, a week before the shooting, he was going to go buy a bone stock semi-automatic AR-15 legally from the gun store, and then on top of that, by himself, load up with for bear and go into this shooting, go into this club and shoot all these people at 2 o'clock in the morning. None of these situations ever make any type of rational sense. Granted, most of these people that they're saying are of some type of psychotic behavior, if it's the actual individual that even did this. But the incidence is the likelihood, guys, the statistical probability that the exact same instances happen over and over and over exactly the same. The Aurora shooting in Colorado, the kid, lone gunman, goes to the store, buys firearms weeks before the shooting, has this super choreographed, outlined protocol that's executed perfectly with military tactics and is executed to the fullest extent by himself. The kid that's basically autistic, 120 pounds and up in there in, the Sandy Hook, kills his mom, steals her gun that she legally purchased, loaded for bear, breaks into a school, kills all these people by himself, and then kills himself. Then we have the same thing in Orlando. This guy buys a gun legally by himself and does the exact same thing. These situations, it's too unlikely that they happen the exact same way every single time, over and over and over again. They use them like this because the narrative that they can spin off on them gives them the ammunition to push these gun laws, these really small incidental gun laws. But these are the ones that slowly chip away our rights. They're never going to be able to go in with a black Sharpie and completely mark out the Second Amendment one day and turn around and say, okay, guys, the Second Amendment's been revoked. We decided just to X that out. It's no longer in the Constitution. They're not going to be able to do that. But what they can do is slowly and surely chip away at our rights so the next 15, 20, 25 years, when this younger generation below us that has no idea about the Founding Fathers, no idea about our constitutional rights, actually believes it's okay to have our firearms taken, they're going to say, oh, okay, this has all happened. We're okay. We'll turn in our guns. The good government won't hurt us. It'll be okay. That's what this whole agenda is about. They know they can't get away with this in one fell swoop. They have to slowly chip away at them, and that's what this whole thing is about. That's why I'm really glad, like Dad said, that they didn't get any of these stupid little laws passed again because of this Orlando, false flag shooting that happened again the exact same way.
Well, Austin, it's interesting. You said something the other day. In fact, you were in the hospital and we were talking about it. And you were saying how back in the 90s with Columbine, these different types of shootings back then, in the areas where they had cameras, they would release videotape of this guy walking through the hallways carrying this weapon.
Yeah.
We haven't seen any videotapes of any of this crap. I mean, we don't even know what happened. I mean, there could have been six shooters in there, and all of them go out the back with a bunch of other people, change clothes, run out with their guns in a backpack. They could have the little minis that you could put in a backpack and run out before the cops got there. They left this one guy there as the patsy to carry the weight for all of them. That's what the eyewitness guys are saying. There was three and four of these guys in there. One of them holding the doors closed. Shoot a bunch of people, then leave. But how many people got shot? Where are the bodies? Where are the body bags? Where are the ambulances? I mean, when I was watching the video the next day, they didn't have any videotape that I watched, and I watched this thing for hours. I didn't see any videotape of any helicopters flying over with ambulances and paramedics and medevac helicopters coming in. I didn't see any of that. None of it. I mean, all I saw was a bunch of cops blocking the road. That's all I saw. I never saw any ambulances pulling anybody out of any bodies out. And you already have any victims out to be sitting to, to go to triage. I never saw any of it. So I'm like, this is just kind of really weird to me. Because remember, I can spin a narrative. I can make up the biggest story in the whole world if I don't have to produce proof. And I can say anything that I want to say about it. I mean, it's just crazy. I mean, people can't even find out where Barack Obama went to college because nobody can find any classmates where he went. Wayne Allen Root was talking about that. I mean, you know, I can call my friends up right now that were at Florida State with me, and they'll testify that we all went to college together. And they'll testify that I dated a bunch of girls when I was up there. And I may even be able to find some of the girls that I haven't talked to in 40 years if they saw me on national TV. Of course, they probably wouldn't look like they did when I was dating them in college. But the whole thing is this. I mean, it's just one of those deals. You know, you've got to be able to produce proof when you start making these crazy claims. And the sad part about this is we never get any proof on any of this stuff, Austin. Now, here's the next story. People are expecting a brawl with the Trump. This is from Zero Hedge, from the Trump-Clinton debates. They'll probably be the most likely watched debates ever. I believe that. Here's what Zero Hedge says. The back and forth between Clinton and the Donald have created an environment where people are genuinely excited to, it's like watching a wrestling match, I guess, and find out what a live televised bait will bring. People are expecting a brawl, which I expect that too. Excuse me. Nothing attracts viewers like a brawl, said Alan Adamson, former branding executive. No one's going to want to be at a dinner party and not have an opinion on who hit the knockout punch. The most watched presidential debate thus far was Reagan and Carter, which in 1980 drew 81 million viewers. That's a lot of people, by the way, with no debate ever coming close to that. Even those outside of the U.S. are looking forward to the debates. Engineering student from Mexico City says Mexicans will be watching, fascinated as never before by the U.S. presidential debate. Of course, they're not going to be able to flood across the border anymore if Trump wins. Okay, in Moscow, a money manager says that Russians are very interested, even though it will mean getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning. This is going to be a huge global televised event. I'm going to watch it. I just hope Trump acts presidential and just keeps talking about what a criminal Hillary is. That's what I hope. I hope he doesn't get down to the mud. But I think he also needs to talk about what Bill Clinton has done. And I saw a really interesting article the other day, and it was about every time Ivana Trump's daughter or one of Trump's daughters are asked questions from reporters, the first thing they are always asked is this. How does your father, Donald Trump, treat women? How does he treat women? One of the first questions they're always asked. Are you proud of the way he treats women? Why didn't somebody ask Chelsea Clinton, okay, Webb Hubble's daughter, supposedly Bill Clinton's daughter, and she looks just like Webb Hubble. Why didn't somebody ask Chelsea Clinton, how does your father treat women when he brags that he slept with 2,000 women, according to these eyewitness accounts? 2,000. How does he treat women, Chelsea? How does your mother treat women who've slept with Bill? I mean, why don't they ask those questions, Austin? Because, I mean, the truth of the matter is we've got a lady coming into the White House who absolutely has treated women who slept with her husband as just, you know, absolutely just, I mean, IRS audits, the whole bit. What a miserable, miserable woman she is. I mean, the truth of the matter, if she wasn't, well, I'm not going to say that. Okay, but, you know, she needs to be taking care of her own husband. Let me put it to you that way. But that's how I think it. So what's your next story, Oz?
I'm having a hard time pulling one up right now. You got okay. Any extra ones?
I do. China is crushing the U.S. in the U.S. supercomputer race. China is now home to the world's most powerful supercomputer for the fourth year in a row. Intended to be used for manufacturing and modeling of Earth systems, the new computer is capable of performing 93,000 trillion calculations per second. I don't even know what that means, okay? More than, I mean, I have to write it on paper and look at all the zeros. I mean, I don't even know how long you could, that 93,000 trillion, that's a lot of calculations. More than five times faster than the closest competitor owned by the United States. At the end of 2008, all the top supercomputers of the planet were in America, but not anymore. China's leading the pack now. You know, what's interesting about this is that we have to understand something here very quickly. You know, because of what we've done to our population and to our children, because we've poisoned them with all of these different immunizations and with all of these different drugs and with all these ADD drugs and ADHD drugs and all these different chemicals, which are basically amphetamine salts we've given these kids, you know, we're now in a situation where our kids are struggling, you know, with 2 + 2 = 5 with Common Core, which is a pretty good struggle. I'd have to struggle with that one too. So the thing about it is how in the world do you come back from an entire generation that's been dumbed down with massive amounts of mercury and chemicals and aluminum and all these 72 vaccines they've been given and wonder why China is now leading the world, you know, in computer technology? I mean, it's absolutely nuts. Here's another article. I saw this one yesterday. Air Force veteran is dragged from a flag-folding ceremony for speech referencing God. Oscar Rodriguez, a 33-year-old Mexican Air Force veteran, was invited to speak at an April flag-folding ceremony by retiring Master Sergeant Charles Robertson, who heard Mr. Rodriguez deliver the speech 1 month prior and wanted it performed on his own retirement ceremony. But when Mr. Rodriguez stood up to deliver the remarks, which included references to God, he was approached immediately by several uniformed attendees, military men, who grabbed him and dragged him out of the room. He was later ordered off the base. Mr. Rodriguez regained the First Liberty Institute, the nation's largest legal institution dedicated to upholding religious liberty, to represent him in a potential legal action against the Air Force. First Liberty sent a letter Monday to the Air Force under the commander at Travis Air Force Base demanding an apology and threatening to take legal action on Mr. Rodriguez's behalf. Attorneys for the First Liberty asked for a response by June 27 or they would pursue all available legal options. The standard flag-folding oration was updated by the Pentagon in 2006. Of course it was. This is under George Bush, remember. This is George W. Now, you guys listen to me for a second. George W. was not who you think he is, to remove any references to the Almighty. But many service members still prefer the traditional version requested at the retirement ceremonies. The traditional version closes with, God bless our flag. God bless our troops. God bless America. So you can't say that anymore. I guess the demons from all hell broke loose on this one, Austin, because these guys are all controlled by Lucifer through the CIA, through all of the junk they do all the time. Not all of them, but a big percentage of them now. And that's what's running the country. Remember last couple years ago, these guys were actually saying, hey, we don't want to do this anymore. In the military, these top generals, and good old Obama went in there, retired hundreds of them, fired them, got rid of them all if they weren't willing to do what they wanted to do. We talked about this yesterday with the CIA having taken over the military now, and the military, you know, basically having this huge amount of homosexuality and pedophilia and sodomy in it. There's a thing you can read. I believe it's a colonel's wife, Griffin, I think her name is, and she does a tell all online, and I'm gonna look it up right now. And she basically goes in and talks about, I think it was called the Pink Triangle or whatever, in which so many now women, so many men now, as they go up, I'm typing and talking at the same time. Sodomy has gotten huge in the military. So this is just unbelievable. You guys, I think it's Griggs is her name, and as she talks about it, I'm going to pull it up online real quick, and that way I'm going to let you guys look for yourself because I don't want you to believe me. This lady, she's on there for like 4 hours, and so it's just unbelievable how this happens all of the time in the Air Force and with the military. And so I can't find it, but I'll have it for you tomorrow. I'm going to pull it up tomorrow. I think it's Kay Griggs. All right. Now I'm doing, and if you guys saw me right here doing this on the thing, you'd be laughing at me thinking, I can't believe Ted can't find this. Wife. Let me see one more time. I think it's Kay Griggs. I'll tell this if I got it, but I'll find it for you tomorrow. Yep, Kay Griggs, right there. Now I got it right. How about that? A former Marine colonel's wife. I remember that. You guys look it up and read it, what she says. She's got like a 4-hour talk on this being interviewed, and she straight calls it out on YouTube. And so this is a major, major problem that's going on that, again, nobody wants to talk about. They don't want God in this because they don't want to have Yahweh's name invoked on any of this stuff anymore. They want to make it all about Lucifer and his minions running around doing this stuff. So the sad part about all of this stuff is, Austin, if we continue to allow this to happen, this is going to get worse and worse and worse. It's not going to get any better. And they know that. They know exactly what they're doing. They know exactly what they're, you know, what they've gotten away with, and they're not planning on doing anything else. That's exactly what they want from the military, because they want the military to be continued to turn over with the CIA stuff. So that's what's going on right now. So guys, listen to me. I mean, this can't stay this way in the United States. We can't allow this to continue, because if we allow it to continue, what's going to happen is it's just going to get worse and worse and worse. And I'm going to go back for 1 second here. We talked about yesterday. And a few minutes ago, we can't allow ourselves to not think about this election as far as the Senate and the House, and also the state and local elections. We've got to have a way now to stay together. If we're going to give Donald Trump this election, we've got to give him a huge huge amount of people in Congress with a lead. So he can actually go in and do stuff that he needs to get done. See, he can't, I don't believe, Austin, he can just build a wall via executive order. I don't think he can do that. I don't think it's ever been tried. But, you know, I mean, it's just one of those things. But we've got to give him the opportunity to try to get some of this stuff through Congress. What do you think, son?
Yeah, you're right. I'm not sure exactly the legal standpoint as far as building the wall. I kind of thought the same thing before. I mean, King Obama's done quite a few things as far as just on his own. But I don't know. I don't know how all this is going to go. But I think, you know, the whole aspect of him saying that is to prove a point, first off, making people realize that we can't be just pushovers anymore in the United States, allowing whatever to happen, and we just accept it because of political correctness. I saw an article earlier this morning. I didn't pull it up, though, as far as for the show. But it was, I think it was up in Minnesota, and a 10-year-old girl was raped by three teenage Muslim refugee boys that were like 10, 12, and 13 years old.
I did that story yesterday, Oz.
Yeah, I mean,
it was over in Oregon, yeah.
So stuff like that happened, and it was basically a giant cover-up. And so this is what we're seeing in the United States now, where it's like, if it's not fitting the narrative, if it's not politically correct, we just want to shut our eyes and say, oh, no, that's offensive. People don't want to know that. We can't talk about that. That just offends people. And that's been the biggest thing that Donald Trump has had on his side, is that he really doesn't care about offending people. And that's good, and it's also bad, because sometimes he's got to watch his mouth on some things, because you can't always just run it all the time without any regard for what it's going to do. But on the other hand, too, I love the aspect that he's not worried about trying to make everybody feel happy all the time and not be, you know, accurate and correct about what's going on. Because back in the day, I mean, like you were talking to me yesterday, Dad, about when you were in Florida State, you know, you said it was a different time. So we didn't have cell phones. You know, pagers were the biggest thing we had. We didn't have internet. We didn't have all this stuff. If you wanted to talk to somebody, you actually had to walk up to them and start a conversation with them. There wasn't this text chatting and all this stuff we have now.
Austin, thank you so much for being back on with me today. I'm so glad you're recovering so quickly. Guys, thank you for supporting Health Masters. Thanks for getting our supplements. Please sign up for our newsletter, healthmasters.com. And send Austin an email. Tell him that you're glad he's back, and continue to pray for him. God bless you guys. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Thanks, Austin. Bye-bye.
Yep. Very good, man. Great to be back on the show again, guys. You guys have a blessed night. And I should be back on with you guys tomorrow and the rest of the week, man. You guys have a good one. Bye-bye.